Am I too loud? I know I have a tendency.
You are too loud as a human, but not too loud. For right.
Awesome.
Now.
All right, man.
It appears as though we're recording.
That's always a bad sign.
I think we're started.
Yay.
You know, I think it's great that after 5 years, we finally get back and do another show.
It hasn't been that long. Well, it's been that long for you.
No, emotionally. No, it's been, I'm kind of all jazzed up about the Rogan show. Not that I thought it was that great, but it really got me kind of
reinvigorated. We'll get to that in a minute. So here it is. It's the, what is it today? The 25th of August, 2013. I don't even know what show this is. We're on 50-something episode guide. Hold on a second. We are on
53.
I didn't update the episode guide on the website. Man, I really suck at this, don't I? Yeah, I think we're on 53. I think you're right.
Don Drysdale episode.
Excellent.
Yep.
Nice one. The first thing we have to talk about today, we have a ton of things to talk about. I think we have just a jam-packed show. Summer's always kind of slow for us, right? I mean, we have things to do. We go out into the woods, whatever. Some of us walk around a lot. We've all got things to do. But the first thing we have to talk about today, I think probably one of the, you know, topics of our age. It could be one of the most important things that humans need to discuss at this point in our history on this planet is what is Ben Affleck doing as the next Batman?
All right, I will talk about that, and I am going to take I completely agree with the contrarian internet. It's become so out of hand. I predict that he will actually do a very good job, because it's a sad state of affairs when people hop on this. Read, you know who Patton Oswalt is? A great, very funny guy.
I saw his thing on Facebook.
I think that is he nailed it. It's just, it's how bored we are with having to comment about comic book friggin' movies. Affleck's last three films, he's done a really good job as a director. He's grown as a person. I think he's going to be really good. Let's go to a clip.
I think that Sam needs to say something.
I think I could give less of a damn. I mean, in all seriousness, I find it just incredibly humorous to watch this swelling nerd rage on the internet when in reality, it's like Scott said, who knows? The guy might actually do a good job. Sure, he's not got the best track record, but right. At the end of the day, how does this even matter in the list of importance of things that are going on in the world right now?
Yeah, it's the only thing I hope he doesn't go with the same Argo hairdo. That's my only request. But again, I would, for those out there, read Patton Oswalt's thing. He gives some really interesting.
It was
specific,
a Facebook post, right? He just posted it on Facebook.
Okay, and I thought it was really good. I thought it was you know, I just think Affleck's one of those guys. When he was younger, he's got that earnestness about him. I always think he's had to live somewhat in the shadow of Damon ever since Good Will Hunting, because Damon's been in generally better films, so he was an easy target. But man,
he's also a generally better actor. I mean, let's not overlook that part.
No, you're right, exactly. But I mean, really, if you're a film fan and you've seen Gone Baby Gone and The Town and Argo, though I thought it was overrated, Affleck has done a really good job. I mean, the guy's a stud, and as Patton Oswalt points out, to stick around to suffer through all these I think misjudgments of him is a testimony to him. That's our show. Good night.
Yeah, I feel really bad for him. You know, being all handsome and rich and all that stuff. It's so hard for him.
Oh, but see, I think that's part of the thing. That's not a fair criticism. So if the guy's good looking, so what? You don't nail him because he's good looking.
No, I'm just saying I don't feel sorry for the dude. Anyway.
Yeah. All right.
That was supposed to be just a joke, is what it was supposed to be. Though I do think I agree with you. He might do a good job. We should keep an open mind, but he's gonna suck. So but I agree with you otherwise. And I just saw on Facebook that he actually signed for multiple films. So we've got him for a long time in the role, in the cherished role of Batman.
And the thing is, it just hasn't been played enough.
No, I mean, really, I think we can all agree, Ben Affleck aside, Batman should just take a rest for about 5 or 6 years. I mean, we should not be talking about Batman.
I completely agree. And especially coming off the heels, which was easily the best series. I mean, not even close. you know, Christopher Nolan with Christian Bale.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Those movies, especially the last one, was not that fantastic, I thought. But totally agree with you. I think the best portrayal of Batman on film just should have left it sit for a while.
Yeah, and it's a total money-making thing, and that's what
Totally. That's the part that sucks about it.
They need to do what Toho Studios did with Godzilla. They got around 2000, and they said, okay, that's enough. We're going to take a break. We're going to take about 15 years.
Right.
And let the hype and the interest build back up, and then we'll drop this monster in 2014, and that's exactly what they did.
I thought that had to do with a lawsuit where the guy died, he asphyxiated in one of the suits.
I don't know. But, I mean, what I read was that it was strictly designed to, we're going to take this away. The way that Disney used to do with their movies, they would say, okay, you know, for the last time, we're going to put Snow White out.
This is for the very last time.
In 1985 on, you know.
And you know who else? Something similar to that was Hitchcock. He kept Rear Window, maybe my favorite movie of all time.
It's a great movie.
Vertigo, which I think is really overrated. And other ones, but he took five, and he took them out of circulation. I mean, like, they would not play in theaters, and he had this, like, an iron contract thing, and said, you know, let it sit. These sort of, let them sit on the shelf for a while. But, you know, I guess there's that temptation when you have stockholders and all this stuff and new generation of kids. But it's all about,
you know, profit growth at this point. You know, it's true, though, that when we were, and this is going to sound like, you know, when we were kids, movies were different because you couldn't see them all the time. You know, you couldn't just download them off the internet and watch whatever you want whenever you wanted to. You had to like, I don't know, Wizard of Oz came around one time a year. And if you missed it, you're screwed. You had to wait another year to see Wizard of Oz.
Still holds up, by the way, in my opinion.
Oh, Wizard of Oz is
great.
Totally. Such a good movie.
I mean, that's a perfect example. Well, you know, if you don't have up-to-date technological prowess, films are going to look bad. Bullshit.
Right. No. That tornado is terrifying.
Oh, my God. That tornado is still one of the best tornadoes.
I know it is. It beat everything in that Twister movie, right? It was just that stupid tornado, which they did like with a, you know, a moving dolly or whatever. It was great.
It was great. It was like some kind of like a stocking or something where it still looks awesome. Really, really awesome.
We should do a show where we only talk about our favorite movies of all time.
I know.
Just screw this Bigfoot thing and just talk about
our favorite Bigfoot movies. A break.
We should. But Bigfoot... Let's segue to our first topic, actually. Maybe we're close to letting Bigfoot lay fallow, just like it did throughout the 80s, right? No one talked about Bigfoot through the 80s and 90s, right? It was a big deal in the 70s. Bigfoot went to bed for a while.
Yeah.
We've got the Joe Rogan Experience. Not really, not Joe Rogan Experience. It's the Joe Rogan Questions Everything.
Yeah.
Television show. He kicked it off. His debut episode of this new series of his was Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And we've all seen it. What do you guys think? What'd you think of it?
I enjoyed it.
I did too. I thought, given I wouldn't call it great because it had that stink of TV, little rushed together some of Joe's things and calling Dr. Johnson a reputable character. I took great, you know, if you're listening, Dr. Johnson, I love you, man, but you're bonkers. Anyway,
I don't think
besides some little things in there, I thought it was a really good condensed, up to date of scientifically where things stand, what are the questions. I love the thing with Disatel. I thought that was great with the friggin' he had the mohawk right out of Taxi Driver, but he's rational and they're showing the screen and Joe's asking simple to the point questions. Anybody wasn't shocked that it probably turned out to be Bear, but I thought it was really good.
We know. I'll say this about the questions that he asked during the show and the way that he presented himself. It's very obvious that he's a student of the game. I mean, this is legitimately something that he is interested in and something that he's invested his own time in. At no point during the entire show does he come across as somebody who's just reading copy material. You know, this is what I've been told
to
ask.
Big enthusiast.
Yes, no. Yeah.
I will slightly disagree with Sam. Generally agree, but slightly disagree. When the show started, there were some of these statements like Gigantopithecus, which researchers believe was on two legs. That anybody who really studies this know that's still purely a theory. That's a Krantz proposed
thing. Researchers, it's true. Some researchers do think.
He put it, I thought, in a general sense, everybody who studies anthropology thinks
But it was TV and it's Joe Rogan. But yeah, exactly. I agree with you. Yeah. I think Sam's right. What I saw in that guy was a serious enthusiast who had never gone out and done anything, but was really into it and is probably an awful lot like most people who get their Bigfoot from TV.
Yeah. I wish there was another way, though. I know it's kind of hard to escape it, but it's so hackneyed now. You know, so I decided to go for myself. To go, and it's like you're not gonna find, but you know, I don't know. I don't know the alternative, you know. But it's like it's so tired.
I liked the. I'll say that I have a complicated response to my own question about whether or not I liked it. I didn't like it, but not because of Joe Rogan. I thought Joe Rogan was likable, and I thought he was obviously enthusiastic. And I just wish he had had better people on the show. You know, I think that the you know the Dr. Johnson thing.
Ugh.
You know what I'm not saying Johnson didn't have the experience, and I'm not trying to sound like a dick, but I'm so tired of that guy bawling every time he tells. I mean, how many times has he told this story, and it's still making him? I don't know. I just there's something about that creeps me out.
It is. He's well, you know, I interviewed him way back when this happened within 48 hours. John Friedis had got the call. He called me. I went up there, and my opinion at the time was I was 50-50. I don't know. He seemed sincere about it, but I honestly think as if you look at the track record of Dr. Johnson, the amount of encounters he claims to have had, I don't want to be a dick. I'm just trying to be honest in a way that's I truly think the guy he's kind of delusional. He really is. He says he has them bumping into him every time they go out. They have one take food.
Literally bumping into him, like he's standing on, and it bumps into him on the trail. That's what he said on the show.
And it's kind of sad, you know, and they have to get off this thing. He's a child psychologist, as though there's never been any crackpot child psychologist in the history of the world or a psychiatrist. Did he see Silence of the Lambs? Not that he was a child. You know what I mean? It's so lame. This self-professed, I'm a psychologist. Oh, well, we should listen to him then. I mean, some psychologists are some of the most fucked up people in the world. So, I don't know. I just think he is so, by his own words, as some kind of credible witness in the history of potential squatchdom proving, is just, man, throw it out, dude. I've said this before in other shows, he might have a little bit of a complex where he thinks he's kind of like the universe's designated Bigfooter, but he really believes that. So therefore, when he goes out, he's going to have these encounters because that's what he's been designated to be. Right. That's his behavior speaks to that type of analysis as a child psychologist myself.
Hold on a second. We lost Sam. I'm going to try to put him back.
Oh, no.
Hold on a second.
Yellow.
All right, there we go.
Generator kick out again?
Something like that.
Yeah. Did a chicken like
pull the chickens that are turning the little behind? Dynamo? They got tired. So.
I could just see like a chicken running over your keyboard and accidentally.
Exactly.
You got the chickens. Wait, you're not recording in the chicken coop again, are you?
No.
Can you Photoshop a chicken into that shot where you're looking into the camera?
Yes, I think we can. So we were saying, anyway, Matt Johnson, I was saying that, so what I didn't like the people he had on the show, like I forget the name of the oncologist, the guy who was basically fronting Melba Ketchum's DNA work.
That was my question. I didn't, because they were,
mentioned Melba, but he is, you know, one of the PhDs that she holds up as someone, or doctors. I don't know if she calls him a PhD, but he's a doctor that she holds up as someone who's looked at her work and found it to be credible. So I think that was kind of unfortunate. I wish he had just said it was Melba Ketchum and put her out there. Maybe he didn't know. I don't know. Seems unlikely.
Swanson?
Yes,
Swanson.
Now, was that a legal thing, you think, or did they not want to give her press?
I don't know. I can't tell you. Yeah, maybe she wouldn't meet with him. Maybe she wouldn't go on the show. So the only way
you could still mention that you were working with, you know, this group.
Right.
But it was fine, because I just thought it still shows, look, on that front, inconclusive. And again, Disotel summed it up really nicely. Look, the base data that they're not providing it isn't there. You can't give me the conclusions without having the core premises that are valid to begin with. So, you know, one thing I liked I actually like to see a little humor from Powell, because Tom Powell
is great.
Yeah, he was. I mean, that whole thing, the interplay between him and him when they were talking about obsession was really a nice moment. Yeah. Well, you're not obsessed. He laughed.
He's the Doc Brown of Sasquatch. I mean, he's just, and when he came into the scene and he had the lab coat on with the goggles.
Right.
I mean, really, all he needed was the freaking DeLorean at that point.
His Bigfoot DeLorean with the big off-road wheels that he takes out into the woods to look for.
But he's got to know. See, this is where, I don't know, his dermal, when he points to the dermal ridge thing, the tubes.
Right.
Know, he just conveniently didn't mention any of that. I thought that was a little weak.
And that's why I'm saying, like, if you look at it from the standpoint of a show about Bigfoot, it was horrible. Because most of the people he talked to, most of the evidence was presented was bad, you know? And even the people came off making it look bad, you know? Yeah. And those two guys that he went out with at the end. So this is the other thing that I don't like. Oh, to your point, Scott, about these guys, well, I want to find out for myself. He was out there one night, apparently.
Yeah.
And the next morning, he looks all pissed off that he didn't see a Bigfoot. It's like, you're out there one night, dude. No, what do you want to have happen?
It's lame, but I got it. There was a great, funny edit, too. I don't know if you caught this, but I think it was right around that time when he went out with those guys. And he's standing on the edge of the forest, and Rogan looks in the camera and goes, it's really dense. And he's standing in stuff that isn't even that dense. I mean, it's like, it's a, you know, fairly, if compared to downtown LA, yes, it's you know, forestly dense. But he goes, we're walking into the forest real time.
Right.
We're walking, and then he walked, and literally 4 seconds later, they cut.
They cut it, right, exactly. I thought the same thing. Like, this is not real time anymore.
And then he's farther along, but it's still not even that dense.
But the thing is, your point, I mean, I'm from LA, right? I remember the first time I went into woods just like those, it freaked me the hell out, because I'd never, I'm from Los Angeles, right? I see a tree, and then 8 feet away, there's another tree. That's my forest, right? I don't see forests like that.
Yeah.
So I get where he's coming from. But the favorite sort of little moment was the gifting stump.
Oh my God. I mean, how can those guys be serious about
I don't know.
How, like, I mean, that is
this
so
rock
exotic.
Moved 3/4 of an inch. Obviously, only a Sasquatch could do that. I don't understand.
There's no coons in them parts.
And they don't leave food because the rodents eat it. And then Rogan looks at the camera like, yeah, okay. You know, like, it couldn't have been anything else but a Bigfoot that came and messed with your gifting stump.
What was your guys' take? I was a little, you know, sometimes when they do these shows, having worked in TV, you know, there's that kind of production meeting thing. Okay, we got to have the pro and the con, which is kind of a bullshit thing, I think, to go in. You shouldn't have any expectations. If it's all good or all bad, whatever. But the whole thing with the possible teepee structure and how Rogan, I can understand whereas he would think he couldn't figure it out. But why would you think, given our descriptions of what supposedly Sasquatch are like, why would they have something like that?
I have no idea. I've never understood the teepee thing because of that. Because it's like, I'm not saying that they don't, you know, when they have that interesting tree break, I'm not saying that I think they do break trees. I think they break trees for specific reasons. You know, other primates have been known to do the same thing. Yeah. But creating a teepee structure that obviously isn't a shelter.
I know.
You know, what is it like to communicate with the home world? I don't know what this thing is for exactly. Is it like pyramid power? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, they'll speculate the Bigfoot does it, but not even kind of go to why it would do it. Just because, well, if a human can't, therefore probably a Bigfoot does it.
And if you go into the woods, I see structures like that all the time. I see them right next to the highway. They're not done by Bigfoot. I mean, trees do weird shit.
Exactly. I think there's just it would really be interesting for somebody to do a little study about, probably, you know, with wind vortexes and you know, how the weight of something can snap it in a way to make it look a certain way. You know,
and snow. Don't forget snow.
Yeah. Our absent co-host, Paul, did exactly that. He went into some woods near his house where there's obviously zero possibility of there being a Sasquatch, and he took photos of exactly these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And he presented that saying, look, if you want a control in your experiment, I'm your control.
Right.
And I'm finding these things too. So obviously there is a flaw in the theory that Sasquatch is creating these things. Now, I'm with Brian. I think that there are instances where, you know, like with tree breaks and certain things like that, that there could be a legitimate origin behind them. And there's even evidence that certain apes use trail markers as a means of communicating with other members in their troop as they're moving through dense vegetation. But you can't go out there and look at something and say, oh, that's really weird looking. Obviously, Sasquatch did that.
Right.
It doesn't pass the test.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like I see something I can't explain, so I'm going to explain it with something. Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. Boom.
I was happy to see Joe as a skeptic of the PGF, obviously.
Well, he doesn't know enough to know yet. So
yeah. Well, then he'll be even more secure if he continues to read. But I thought that even though that was kind of short, I thought it kind of it was edited pretty well. I know they're doing a lot of stuff in there, and although again I would come back, you know, Meldrum saying that Hieronymus's proportions don't fit. How do you know? You don't even know if it is a guy in a suit. You don't know where his elbow is, all that stuff. So I thought that was good. Scott Nelson. Wow. That guy just, that's,
I thought that was one of the most entertaining sections of the show simply because of how Rogan handled him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Nelson's presentation was what it was, and whether, you know, you put any emphasis in it or not, that's your prerogative. But just watching Rogan's facial expressions and some of the responses he had to it, it was pretty priceless.
I liked how he didn't do an exact impersonation, but I think he said, oh, no human can do this. And then he goes, blah, 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 like that.
I just did it. Right.
I just did it. Right. Well, he didn't do it exactly. So, and I don't know. Did we ever talk about the Sierra Sounds? I've always thought
we've spoken about them. I mean, and the thing is, yeah, we can talk about them again. My opinion of the Sierra Sounds has changed quite a bit. It's a complicated thing.
It could be real. I think
the first disc and the second one are so different, and no one has explained to me why that is. You know what I'm saying? If you listen to both of them, like the first one, I've heard things that sound like what's in that first disc with my own ears, right? But in the second one, it's an entirely different thing. What the hell? I don't understand how those things. Anyway.
Anyway, I think it's something that one shouldn't immediately discount, but when you listen to those original tapes, the ones where I guess Barry was up there, there is some pretty quick noises that that are pretty, not that they're, I'm not saying they're impossible for a human to do, but they really come off non-human. So there, if it is somebody mimicking, I think they're doing a really interesting, good job.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, again, my own personal experience tells me that there may be something to that first disc. That doesn't mean that. And for the people who don't know what I'm talking about, there are two Sierra Sounds discs. There was the first one that was narrated by number one, Jonathan Frakes.
Right, yeah.
And then the second one came out a little while later. And the recordings, the sounds on these two things are completely different. They're just totally completely different. They don't sound anything alike, but they're supposed to be both Bigfoot out in the Sierras.
And now, were they supposedly recorded by the same person?
I believe so. I've only listened to the second one a couple of times because I think it's crap, and so I don't really know the story behind it quite as well.
That would lend some doubt to me because if it's by the same guy, absolutely then the second, right. He was just clever the first time.
Right.
The first one comes across very much like The Legend of Boggy Creek. The second one comes across like watching Legend of Bigfoot. Right. I mean, it's so hokey and it's so over the top cheesy. But I'm with Brian. I mean, there are some things on that first CD that I've heard. And either it's a known animal that just happened to make it into this CD that makes a as of yet unrecognized vocalization.
Right.
Or there's something to it. But I have to put that big asterisk up there every time I talk about it because there was obviously some hokiness and some very questionable stuff going on around that.
Oh, yeah.
If you've ever seen the supposed tracks they found in conjunction with the recordings. Krantz said it was the fakest tracks he'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to interview Moorhead one time way back in the day. And one of the first things he did before we even went on the radio was to say, we're not talking about any of the alleged paranormal aspects of these recordings, even though Al Berry went on to write an entire book about it. About the paranormal aspects of Sasquatch and particularly the Sierra Sounds recordings. So it's very conflicting for me personally.
Same here. It's got that exactly. I always remember that quote from Krantz that he said, they look fake and I've seen the picture and they do. They look so not that that's impossible. You can have, I think, people who have had genuine experiences, then they get the bug and then they start faking stuff. I think that's a possibility that's happened. You know? So it's like you got to look at each individual piece of evidence individually and Let's go to a clip.
Just pound the table one more time.
Yeah.
Please.
Thank you. I hope that's your table. I don't know what you're pounding on, but
he's wood knocking.
My head is very hard.
He's wood knocking.
And by wood knocking, I mean masturbating.
Did you? Well, I don't think that's happened on the show yet, so this could be.
Yeah, it's good to keep things mysterious.
I thought you were going to say limber, but okay.
That's contradictory to the master. Anyway, limber.
So I also bought Cliff Brackman's Bigfoot Road Trip. His CD, and it's that I enjoyed. That's fun.
Really,
you guys haven't seen. Oh, it's totally fun. You know, I think that it's a little hokey and a little silly, but I think that's Flippy, Craig Flippy. That's his style of sort of like quote unquote filmmaking. That's just what he does. I think Scott, you should see it just because it's sort of like in your bailiwick, and you've done one, and I think that yours had sort of a tongue-in-cheek aspect to it as well.
Right.
But especially the second one, I think it wasn't quite as silly. Anyway, it's fun. I can't not recommend it. I think it's enjoyable. I think it's definitely worth it. I mean, you get the London Trackway from the inside, you know, what happened there and how they sort of discovered it and documented it. It's hard not to like Cliff Brackman. He's just so genuinely enthusiastic about this topic.
He does seem likable. Again, I'm only going on what I've seen on Finding Bigfoot and being willing to be part of that show. But my problem is that it gets very fuzzy sometimes between, you know, what he's promoting is good science and whatnot. Now, and if in that show, like the one you said you saw, and it's pretty clear that this is being comedic and they're not taking it too seriously, then fine. But when you're starting to mix it up like that and you're trying to get away, I think, with stuff, I don't respect that. I'll have to see it, but I respect your opinion.
Yeah,
so.
I think it was just them just trying to have a good time with it, you know? But I don't think it comes off as like they're trying to make the subject a joke. I think that they do, you know, they have these talking Bigfoot puppets that sort of in between segments, which are kind of funny because they're like, you know, talking about anyway. It's definitely enjoyable, and if you're really into the subject, if you like Finding Bigfoot, if you like Cliff Brackman, I think that it's a no-brainer.
Squatching by Scott Harriet, would that be?
If you like Squatching by Scott Harriet, or Journey to Squatchdom, probably as well.
Those are available on Amazon.
I think they are. If you search for those on Amazon, anyway, they're all sort of a ilk, but it does make me wish that you would do something again like it.
I know. It just
comes
back.
As I was watching it, I was like, God, I wish Scott would do another one of these. Not to take anything away from you know, the Bigfoot Road Trip, which was enjoyable. I mean, God, I wish Scott would do another one of those.
I just...
Yes, Sam?
Don't encourage me, I think is what he's going to say.
Please don't.
I just, you know, it seems like so many things, back to near the top of the show with time to give Bigfoot a rest and all that. I'm just saying, where would I go that I haven't gone or that somebody else hasn't gone? You don't want to do the same old joke again. But
there's so many people out
there. I know. It would be fun. But I don't get enough exercise. That's why I like doing these... I went to Spain, by the way.
Yeah, I know. We didn't talk about that. We talked about you being in Spain while you were there.
I would like to just mention one thing Bigfoot related about Spain. Actually, it's not, I just want to say this. Northern Spain was much more densely vegetated in parts than I thought.
Really?
And I thought what was interesting, I am not aware of, obviously that doesn't mean that's not the case, but that I've never heard any Bigfoot stories out of Spain in anywhere. And yet there were regions that you would, you know, in other words, for the people who make the argument, well, wherever there's forests, there's going to be forest people stories.
Right.
And I didn't hear anyone was there. Not that I was really inquiring, but I was surprised that there were specific areas in Southern France and in Northern Spain that were really nice and foresty.
Scott said, I'm Scott, you're not Scott, Paul, says that there are the occasional stories coming out of England, out of the forests of England, about giant hairy creatures, which is, you know, but they're few and far between, which just leans, you know, nobody's ever said that all of the people who have said they saw Bigfoot saw Bigfoot. Some of them are clearly delusional. So, but to your point, I don't remember ever hearing anything out of Spain either. It isn't part of what happens in Spain.
True.
Or Europe in general at this point. I mean, you know, there's other forests. There's the Black Forest. There's forests all over Europe, and nobody ever, not that I'm here anyway.
But relative, I would say, to our country and other parts of the world, it is pretty denuded there. I mean, there just aren't right. large tracts of forest, which, you know, obviously for the reality of there being a Sasquatch obviously helps, but also just the idea too, the myth right. would build more around areas where there are large tracts of forest.
So what do you call on this new disc of yours, this new show?
You know what? I'm up for, it was the Camino de Santiago. Mm-hmm. And I was partially inspired by the film The Way, which is, I think, a really good film with Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez. And because I've been doing these long-distance trail films. I don't know. So if anybody's got any suggestions, right now it's Squatch Does the Camino, because that's my trail name.
Oh.
Yeah, that's lame. So, or how about Camino de Squatchiago?
A little better.
I like that better, yeah.
A little, I just, Sam.
How little. About El Camino Real? No, that's taken.
Please buy this so I can
eat food. Just buy this because I like food.
Please buy this. I promise not to do weak science like Cliff Barackman.
Oh, no.
That's not nice.
So, Bigfoot Road Trip, I would check it out if you like.
Okay, no. So question I had yes. about that. Did you ever see Autumn Williams?
Yes, I have that as well.
DVD, the Search for a Legend.
Yeah, part one. I don't think she ever came out with part
two. Yeah, she never. I don't think she ever did. How did... In my mind, I imagine the two being similar in that it shows more of that, you know, one-on-one direct researcher interaction. Is it like that or is it more?
You know, it's been a while since I saw Autumn's thing. I also enjoyed that. You know, I just enjoy watching people go out and do this stuff because I do it. So it's always curious. And I haven't done it with them necessarily. So I like to see other people do it, you know. And especially people who are in these great areas that I'm unfortunately not. So they can just sort of like basically drive for a couple hours out of their back door and suddenly they're in the middle of this fantastic forest. Yeah. Autumn's thing was a lot more personal in that it was about this very specific trip that they took out there and the things that they did specifically on that trip. Mm-hmm. Cliff's was a little broader. They did go out and do a few things. But it was also about them traveling around and talking to people and, you know, the documentation, the London Trackway is in there you know, how that went. So it's a little broader. It spans more time and sort of delves into more topics. And Autumn's was really more about just going out into the woods on that one trip, I think, my recollection being.
Yeah, well, no, you're pretty much
so it doesn't feel quite as... Autumn's felt smaller, you know, just because it was about a very specific, quote unquote, expedition, whereas Brackman's is a little broader and more like a TV show, you know, and also like significantly goofier. I mean, way goofier. It's very, very much tongue in cheek and almost to the point like it starts out so over the top, you almost can't watch it. Right. It's just so silly. But then it settles down and it gets better as it goes along.
Mm.
Yeah. And again, that's Craig Flippy. Craig Flippy, funny guy, you know, and he really enjoys making this goofy stuff, and that's fine. But it was just a little too much. I think at the beginning of the first 25% of it was a little too much.
Was there a lot of banjo music?
Oh no,
kazoos!
Watch yourself.
There were no. I have to say there were Bigfoot puppets. I mean, that should tell you a lot.
Yeah.
There were like these two Bigfoot
awesome,
puppets.
They were
funny too. That's the thing. That was funny. I'm not saying it wasn't funny. It was just a little too goofy at the beginning. You know, when you're making funny faces at the camera and the quick cuts and stuff like that. It was super, super silly. And that was really just them out in the woods having a good time doing stupid stuff. And some of it was really stupid. But then they, like I said, it settled down and it got better. And I enjoyed it. At the end of it, I was glad I watched it. And
I think we could make a successful documentary about the four of us coming together at a research location to film an on-site Bigfoot show.
I think that would be awesome.
Yeah.
We should do a Kickstarter.
That would
just,
be cool.
Just
wait,
to do that.
Wait, reiterate that premise again.
What we would do is, just like you were saying, you know, Autumn's thing was, her documentary was about one specific expedition. We make a documentary about the four of us traveling from our, you know, far-strung locations to come together either in the Pacific Northwest or Southeast Oklahoma or somewhere like that.
Somewhere.
To do
They'll never let me in.
Yes. To do an on-scene Bigfoot show.
Yeah.
And, that would be so cool.
That would be fun. We have enough... can I direct?
Sure. You're the only one with any experience.
It would save costs.
It sure would.
Do I reap all the profits?
You could do the editing. I mean, you know, to Sam's point, we would all be sort of, we filming should all be own. Filming our own bits of it, right?
Yes, that would be, just keep shooting and talking and, and maybe I'd like to see, to the point we made earlier, you know, almost, you know, definitely have some mocking in there as far as the tired aspects of Bigfoot shows. Like, let's go take a look.
It's the Bigfoot show, man. We have to mock it.
We
haven't even made fun of Johnson's, you know, need for a man's ear yet.
Yes.
Talk about mocking. Anyway.
It's a bro.
The man's ear will never work.
Anyway, I think this would be really fun. And the problem is, of course, it would cost a lot of money and take a lot of time. And it would,
If you get travel cut, how much? And it would be.
I don't think we'd need a ton of money.
I don't.
You know,
well,
we got to buy some cameras. You've got a camera. I've got a camera. We need to buy two more cameras.
And also, we're talking about a length of a film. For it to be like a full-length documentary, might be a little thin. Just four guys talking. We'd have to talk.
Yeah, but see, you've got the true story is the journey. It's like The Hobbit, you know. So you've got a good portion of it that's each
Seriously,
of us.
If you've ever read the first book of The Lord of the Rings, that first half, that's horribly long, just boring walking. That's all I do is
just
walk.
Just getting there.
Right,
yeah.
Just getting there.
All right, I mean, if there's a shot of Sam on the plane playing a banjo,
I can make that happen.
We can totally make that happen. All right, so what we should talk about this, and maybe we'll leave it up to our community members, our friends on Facebook to like, I don't know, because we'd have to raise some money for this.
Oh, yeah. We'd have to pimp it. I mean, totally. There's no getting around it.
I can fly pretty cheap. Dad was a pilot. I still get passes. So
awesome.
You know, yeah,
I probably drive wherever we go.
Yeah, I can drive too, so cover my gas money.
So what we now need, if you're not going to fly, we need to see you in your vehicle driving and playing the banjo at the same time.
Well, see, I've got a little bit of experience with this because
driving and playing the banjo.
Play the banjo.
No. Twice now, I've gone on these semi-epic camping trips with a best friend of mine. The first one, we went up to Virginia and we camped at Big Stone Gap,
right
at the Big Cherry Reservoir. And then when I was living in Oklahoma, he came out to see me, and we went down to Tallahena and camped out in the woods down there. And to commemorate these events, I made sort of mockumentaries of both trips. The first one is just brutal in its inefficiency and amateurishness, but the second one's actually not too bad. And and that's exactly what it is. I mean, there's a lot of me driving and getting ready and packing gear and talking to the camera, just like what we're talking about. And it's a really great way to, like I said, commemorate something like that, and have a little bit of fun in the process.
At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if it's any good because they've already given us their money for it.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we got to make, come on. And I think where we should go, actually, even though it's been done a lot, maybe we could get him to come up for a cameo, would be, or at least a cardboard cutout would be Goldthwait, is I think Bluff Creek would be a good area because it's a great area. It's near where the thing happened to me 20 years ago.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that.
Like, we go to Bluff Creek. Yeah. You know, it's been done, but I think there's enough.
Well, so here's the thing. It could be us taking a road trip up the coast, you know, from basically, the northern third of California up into Washington. That would be just
that would be
there's
even
all,
better.
There's all kinds of spots, right?
We all meet at a central location.
Right.
And we document our journey there.
Right.
And then the four of us together in some, you know, poor rental vehicle proceed to make our way the rest of the way.
Right.
Yet you know we're getting the insurance on that thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of like little hotspots you could top. You know, you could start at Bluff Creek and end at Skookum Meadow.
Yeah, and get to, you know, like, and we could have the update, either the BFRO, you know, the ones with the most, what we would seriously consider, what we think are like fairly recent, legitimate sighting, go to those general areas.
Yeah. This could be epic. It could be multi-parts. Now we're going to stretch it out over like four DVDs.
Oh, God.
Okay. I think that's a great idea. We should.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
We've just spent half the show talking about something that we haven't even done yet. Let's see. What else we got? We got, I wrote a thing. I'm just going down this list of on the backstage list of stuff. I wrote this thing about skeptics.
Oh, yeah. It was good.
See, here's my problem. I hate when these people say, I'm a skeptic. As if to say that I'll believe anything, right? I mean, is that the other side of that? That if you're a skeptic, then I'm clearly a creduloid. I don't understand how that works, right? So I don't believe that it's right to call people who don't accept all Bigfoot claims as skeptics, because no one should do that.
Well, it's a common debate tactic, though, to paint your opponent as the most extreme end of their part of the spectrum. So, you know, if you're a conservative, you paint your opponent as the most liberal of liberals. Or if you're a liberal, you paint your conservative opponent at the same way. And I think that's – we're just seeing that typified here in our own little
screwed up universe.
Yeah.
Slice of hell.
Well, I think the problem is we've talked about it numerous times on the show, is the interesting aspect of this phenomenon, or one of the interesting aspects, is that – is the – built in to a degree goofiness of the topic via words like Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Harry and the Hendersons. There is this cultural thing that people who aren't particularly interested in the topic, that's all they know about it. Well, that's a cartoon. So how could I can't apply scientific reasoning to that? They're close-minded or not interested. So if they make it, they're just speaking from kind of an uninformed viewpoint, and you just hopefully they realize that. I mean, and you do a very good job of delineating. I mean, truly what you're saying is someone who takes that opinion, who is the skeptic. I mean,
right. Well, and that's the thing. I think that we take this word skeptic and that somehow, because skepticism is a good thing, right?
Yes.
Skepticism is something you should strive to have in everything you do. So somehow by saying these guys are skeptics, they are the epitome of what people should be. And sometimes that means they completely discount and throw away everything. That's not skepticism.
Skepticism. Yeah, it's skepticism.
You've got to have the ability to accept evidence and then sort of process it and come up with a point of view on it. And by saying it's all crap is not being a skeptic. That's, you know, being a skeptic. And I think that's the end of the day. That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, I think there's a certain personality type. In fact, one of the friends I'm going on this Mount Whitney trip, leaving in about 2 hours to go to, he is kind of in that skeptical. He's a really smart guy, but he's really, it's like he's so afraid to be associated with anything that hasn't been established yet. I'm not going to stick my neck out and talk about anything like that because I'll be made fun of.
Right.
Or, you know, like something happened when they were young, or it's in their genetic code or whatever. It's just they're so afraid to speculate. Like, hey, dude, we're just speculating.
That
we're
fear of being wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think that's a ton of it. I mean, and that's the thing that my personal experience in this field, talking to people, is that nobody wants to be wrong. You know, they don't want to have had said anything that will later be proven to show or thought to be, you know, kind of a stupid thing. Like they believed somebody when that person turned out to be a hoaxer or whatever. All you can do is process what's in front of you. But maybe I'm just not afraid of being wrong enough. Maybe that's why that kind of stuff bothers me. I just don't like people who don't take a stand. You know, I want to know what they think. And they're always like, there's all this hemming and hawing about, well, you know, I'm not saying I believe any of this stuff, but like, just tell me what you think and shut up.
Yeah,
it.
And it, as though it's not okay to not know. It's okay.
It's great
not
to not
to
know. That's the whole point of the whole point of being alive is not knowing stuff and figuring stuff out.
Yeah, and
that's why we're here.
Exactly. Well, I think for love and food too. Well, but love and food and not knowing anything for sure.
Please buy this. I like love and food. Neither of which are free.
El Camino de Santiago. There is just this. You understand on the other side of the coin. You understand that and I think most of us would agree there are definitely people in the crackpot realm. So maybe these people who are so reluctant, they've had a lot of experience with people in the crackpot. Maybe they were a little crackpotty at one time. I knew a guy who was so into alien abduction stuff. And I would call this guy a fairly bright guy, but he was so convinced. And then he just whipsawed to the other side. So anytime like Bigfoot related stuff would come up, he would just shut it down. Just, no, that's crazy. It's like he was afraid psychologically.
Right. He couldn't let himself go there.
He couldn't let himself. And again, it just comes back to the point. All you're doing is pondering possibilities. That's what and probabilities and making that opinion and going forward and seeing what happens.
It's a process.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I have a friend who joined MUFON basically just to have something to do. And he still comes back and just tells me, regales me with these stories of how crazy these people are and some of the things that they do. And it's kind of good to hear that, you know, it's not just us,
no.
You know, that there are other people out there in other fields.
Some of those Bigfoot guys, I'm sorry, the UFO guys, some of them are.
Oh, yeah.
They're crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
and of course, some of us are crazy too.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's crazy people in every field. You just gotta listen. Okay, listen to what someone says, whatever field they're in, whatever age, whatever. Okay, that sounds reasonable. Ooh, I've heard that from a lot of, you know, you base it on, have there been a lot of other stories like that? What kind of physical evidence? And then you just weigh it.
Right.
You know, weigh everything.
It's worth saying though that we are seeing this through the lens of the internet, and the internet attracts assholes. More so than anything else. I mean, to paraphrase Amy Bruni, she recently tweeted that if your faith in humanity is starting to be restored, just read the comment section under any news article
that's
the internet.
It, man, that's exactly it.
And it's true. I mean, you're not going to go to the Texas Bigfoot Convention and have somebody standing up in the middle of all these people randomly and just saying, "Wankers, you're all a bunch of crazy people." No, you don't see that in real human interaction, but you put it on the internet,
right.
People suddenly have no problem at all being the biggest dicks in the world.
What is it about that? Why are people such assholes on the internet?
Because they think they have a barrier. You can't see them. They don't know who you are, so they've got insecurity problems. So they have to. That's the way they strike back. I was playing a Scrabble game yesterday, guys. I'm a huge Scrabble. I played 8,000 games on this one site. And I play in this particular defensive method thing, and the lady isn't talking. You have chat, but she didn't chat. And I'm going to beat her, and all she goes, "You're so pathetic." And I go, "What?" "What do you mean?" She goes, "You play this game to win." I can't, you know, like I was like, "Where did that come from?" We're playing a game. It was so it hurt me so bad. But it was like
I still love you.
Thank you. There's no way exactly what you're saying that somebody would say that in person. But they have a screen in between. Hey, I'm, you know, she could be in Guam for all I know.
We've talked about this on the show a long time ago, I think. But there was a guy back in the old days of the Bigfoot forums who was the biggest, most awful troll ever. I mean, just horrible, hateful, hurtful person. Just really, really nasty. And this guy... One day, another guy who I know reaches out to me and says, "Do you do this Bigfoot show thing? Like, I was listening to this podcast, and it was you that was on this show." And I'm like, "Yeah, that was me. How did you? That's so random that you would find that, right?" And I'm like, "What's your interest in the field?" He's like, "I'm so and so on the Bigfoot forums." I'm like, "You're that guy? That horrible, evil? I mean, this guy. I've hung out with him socially. He's nice. He's funny. We'd have drinks, whatever. But on the internet, he was an awful, awful human being."
Wow.
It was so, like, that hurt my brain. Dissonance of having, like, this disgustingly horrible person on one side be this guy, the husband of this contractor I've worked with for years and who is actually very, you know, fun to hang out with socially. It was impossible for me to comprehend. And I haven't even spoken to him after that. It's like, I can't do it anymore. Because, like, there's inside him, there was this horrible thing.
I think again, and it gets to the lack of relative scope of communication you can have on the internet, because it's all text. It's just text as opposed to in person. So you can have you could have a guy, the words in it literally could be super mean, but maybe part of his intention. I'm not saying that it sounds like coming from you that there was definitely at least some negativity.
Oh, he hateful. Yeah.
Yeah. And then so, but when you're in person, you can, you know, you're communicating or maybe it's an automatic defensive position. I'm going to take this defensive position, damn it. Nobody's going to tell me this. I've got my voice here and la, 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 you know, so they go to one extreme.
I think it's these guys that are projecting the hatred of their own interest in this field, right? And I think there's so many of them on the internet that they listen to our podcast or podcasts like it. They go to the Bigfoot forums. They go to the other Bigfoot websites. They watch Finding Bigfoot, and they cannot believe that they are interested in this stuff. And they hate it so much. They hate this about themselves so much. They turn around and they take it out on everybody else, right? Because
that's
funny. And I, honest to God, I think that's 50% of these guys on the internet. In our field, anyway.
But it's not just our field, though.
No, I mean, no. I totally agree with you. I, there's something else, but when you're talking about these trolls, I think that's what it is. But you're right. I think that, that inside every human being is potentially, and I don't think it's every single person.
A giant butthole.
Yeah, and who's going to let that out? I guess it's like, what kind of people let that out and what kind of people don't? That would be a fascinating thing to study. Because I've never done that. I don't, and I'm sure you guys haven't. Somebody's, you haven't.
Somebody's master thesis is waiting for them
totally.
Right there.
How does an otherwise normal person turn into a complete sociopath when they're in a comment field on it? And I agree with you, man. You look at the I can't even read them.
I can't.
You can't. Because it just makes you think that people are horrible.
Yeah, like a sensory disconnect. I think you were kind of onto it. It seems like it's because it is a physically different situation. I'm in front of a screen. I'm all alone. I'm in my underpants. I'm just speaking about myself. Right. As opposed to in a social situation, it's physically different.
Right.
So given your upbringing, what you've learned, you could see where they're probably not even fully aware of it. They think.
Yeah,
I mean, it sounds like this guy you were talking about sounded like kind of like, oh, really?
Oh, because he had he was not ashamed at all. He was like, oh, I'm this guy on the Bigfoot forums. I'm like, dude, I banned your ass, right? I mean, what do you mean you're that guy on the Bigfoot forums?
Maybe maybe they got like a weird thing, like there's different rules of etiquette for the internet. Well, it's the internet. It's it's free range assholiness.
How the hell do we get on this subject?
I don't know, but it's pretty interesting.
It's fun. All right, we're going to let's go to a commercial real quick, and then we'll come back and talk about the incredible Squatch It. Have you guys seen the Squatch It?
Yes.
Is this the collar?
The stupid. Now the collar. It doesn't even sound like a Bigfoot. It sounds like a duck or something.
It sounds like a duck being stepped on
by a Sasquatch.
By a Sasquatch.
I don't know who's putting this out. I know that Craig Woolheater was behind it quite a bit on the Cryptomundo. I don't know if he's gotten an involvement in it financially. Maybe somebody's told me something and I've forgotten it, but anyway, apparently they met their funding requirements, so we're going to have this as a product now.
Have you ever thought it always, maybe we've talked about it on the show, but I think it's just these moments are amazing to me where you sit and realize in the history of humanity and the under a general heading of discovery of animals or searching for animals, I don't think there has ever been anything remotely close as multi-dimensional, goofy, fun, strange, intense, philosophical as the search for Bigfoot. I don't even think it's close. It's very unique, and I'm proud to be part of it.
Nessie, maybe?
I think Bigfoot's bigger.
Because Nessie's only in that one lake, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Bigfoot has a wider thing, and with the web, you got so many shows about it. I think it's bigger. I think Nessie, to a degree, applies, but...
What's interesting, if you read this book on about the Paul DeChaillu who went out and I don't know, Sam, have you heard of this book?
This book is going to haunt me to the grave. But yes, I have heard of this.
What's it called again? I've actually forgotten what it's called.
Between Man and Beast.
Between Man and Beast. There was a lot of crazy shit thought about gorillas before they were actually studied and brought forward to science. And when they knew they were there, they knew that they existed. But before there's any sort of studying had gone on, but not the kind of stuff you're talking about. Not this crazy ass, titanium infrastructure, spaceship, multi-dimensional turning into a bee thing that people on the internet have said about Bigfoot.
Yeah.
No,
and I think
nothing
just,
like that.
I just think you said it there. It's because of the internet. There wasn't the internet then. So internet allows an arena for much more freer speculation. We've had so many sci-fi movies. There's so much more fantasy, I think, in the world that it gets all mixed up.
It's a product. I mean, it's a product that honestly doesn't need the actual living subject to continue to succeed. I mean, even if we don't prove that this thing is real for another 20 years, in 20 years, there will be Bigfoot merchandise. There will be Bigfoot products out there because it has just completely taken on a life of its own.
And it doesn't matter if it's real or not.
Yeah. I mean, I have a freaking Bigfoot bird bath out on the side of my house. I picked it up at one of those at a Big Lots. It's like a wholesale cheap everything kind of store, and it's a big Bigfoot track. It's like the classic hourglass kind of shape, and it's got a little bird perched on the edge of it. That's how just widespread and ingrained it is. I mean, they're making freaking bird baths, and now they're making these little plastic collars that are not going to do anything other than annoy people that are in earshot.
Bigfoot is the modern day snipe.
See, I don't think, I mean,
I don't think exclusively, but I think there is that dimension to it.
That it's that thing. It could be used like a snipe.
It could be, hey, let's go, you know. Oh, yeah. I mean, we obviously think there's something real to it. We don't, but I think there are people who look at it that way. I think you would definitely have some people in the skeptical leaning, scoptic. Well, you know, they're just people need always something to search for. So they've latched on to this completely unrational possibility and blah, blah, blah. And, I, of course, disagree with that, but I think there's elements to it. Fascinating. Whoop, did I lose you?
No, I can hear you. You just sound like you stepped away from the computer.
I did. Hold on. My dog is trying to get in the room. Hold on.
Okay. How are your chickens, Sam? Any chickens trying to get in the room?
They're all down in the coop.
Besides chickens, what do you have on the farm?
We have chickens. We have cayuga ducks. We have
What kind of ducks?
Cayuga.
Cayuga ducks, okay.
It's a heritage breed. And okay. We have a donkey named Donald. And we have two pigs.
So the chickens lay eggs?
Yes, they do.
What are the ducks for?
The ducks lay eggs. And then they're
also... Do you eat them like chicken eggs? Just like regular?
Yes. Okay. Yes. They're slightly different.
Your cholesterol has to be off the chart.
Well, yeah. the yolk to white ratio is much different. The duck yolk is a lot bigger.
Oh.
But it makes them excellent for baking. So if you're making pies or cakes or noodles or whatever.
So the donkeys, what's he do?
He keeps the coyotes away.
Oh, really?
Yes. He is a guard donkey.
No, get out.
Yes. Really?
Does he bray at them? Does he like...
No, if you were to let a dog or a coyote into the pasture with him, he would immediately try to kill it.
Excellent.
Yeah, there's something in their instinct to do that.
This is all donkeys, not just your donkey.
Yes, all donkeys.
Wow. Is there any way a donkey could kill a reasonably healthy dog or coyote?
Absolutely.
They can? Well, they kick them. Do they lure them behind them and they kick them in the head?
What they do is it's a combination of biting and stomping. And then if they get the opportunity, they will bite the animal and hold it down and then literally fall forward on it with their knees and crush it.
That's what that cow tried to do to Paul's wife.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you considered buying a World Wrestling Federation outfit for your donkey?
Oh, that'd be awesome. Like a Mexican wrestling mask on his head with his ears sticking
coming
out.
Off the top rope with the elbow. Yeah, no. yeah, that's what we've got. And
You've also got the pigs.
Yeah, you're
going to eat the pigs, right?
Yes, we're going
to
eat the pigs.
I just wanted to figure out of these sort of bunch of animals. Which of them are going to be eaten at some point? It's going to be the pigs.
Yeah. Actually, we will probably be eating chickens sooner than we eat pigs because this is the first year that we've raised chickens and ducks. We finally got to the point where I built an incubator and we're hatching our own egg.
Are you going to, they're going to let them until they stop laying and then you eat them up, or are you going to eat them before then? I don't know how this works.
You can do either or. The older they get, though, the tougher they get.
Yeah.
So it's actually better to just go ahead and cull them early. And I've got a few extra.
Not the culling early part. I meant tougher. Never mind.
Sam, how much time does care and feeding and slaughtering the animals
involve in a given week? Since Paul's not on the show, I'm the one that has to like have the big time suck where I talk about stuff that's totally unrelated to the subject.
No, because here's the thing. At some point, I can change the subject and you'll let me. That's the difference between you and Paul.
Yeah. In the morning, it takes about a half hour to let the ones out that need to be let out. And
to gut a donkey. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And then in the afternoon, it's about 30, 45 minutes. So, it's not too bad. Now, I mean, it varies. Like yesterday, it was an hour and a half in the morning and about an hour in the afternoon because I was moving. I have a big brooder box, and I'd raised the chicks up big enough to where it was time for them to come out of the box and go down to the coop. But you can't just put them straight into the coop. You have to give the other chickens a chance to get to know them. So I had to segregate them into these little wire cages and put the cages in the coop. And
Strain was telling me about that because he has chickens too. And you put you have to like put special little cages inside the other chickens so that they won't pack them to death.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking
chickens
of
are assholes. So.
They are assholes. They are.
How is Kathy Strange doing? Is she near that?
She's
Yosemite
very near
fire?
The rim fire in California, which last time I checked was 126,000 acres. Ugh. And yes. had moved into Yosemite National Park, but still yes. was quite a ways from Yosemite Valley, which is yeah. what most people think of when they think of Yosemite. Right. She can see it from her house. She can see it over the at the edge of the. So it's actually, if I'm looking at the map correctly, it's closer to Sonora where she lives than it is to Yosemite. It's definitely in the path of populated areas, and Kathy yeah. has been impacted. I mean, that's her forest. That's where she works all day long.
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly.
It's a horrible fire. It's a horrible fire.
I yeah. can't imagine.
And yeah, it's causing, like the other night we had the moon came up here and it was blood red. I mean, it was as red, it looked like Mars. It was so, I've never seen a moon that color before. And it was because of that fire, because of the smoke from that fire.
Wait, well, in Minnesota?
In Minnesota, absolutely. What? Our skies right now are hazy. We have hazy skies. We've had hazy skies for 2 weeks now because of fires out west. Our sky's white because of the smoke from those fires.
And you read, you confirmed this online? Because
absolutely.
Because
no, it's on the news.
You went to Snopes, right?
I went to Snopes and checked. No, dude, it's like on the news. The weather reporters are talking about it. The reason our skies are hazy is because of the fires out west. And you can look at it. If you look at a big enough picture, you can see the smoke coming off that fire. And you can just watch it spread, and it definitely is visible here in Minnesota.
The reason I was saying it, I thought it was interesting is because that's Minnesota's higher, you know, latitude-wise, and I didn't think the jet stream would take it.
It really depends on where the wind is going. And right now, if you look at the smoke from that fire, it goes to the northeast, and then it sort of heads to the east. So it's definitely something that's affecting us. I mean, we can't smell it or anything, but it's way up high. But she's close. She's too darn close for that.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's only 7% contained at this point, so I don't know.
And any potential evacuation?
Not around her. It isn't that close yet, but you know, you never know where these things are going to go. And you know, I've been to her house. They have a great place. They've got, you know, property and chickens and you know, not quite to the extent that Sam has, but they've got a couple of goats. And I mean, where they live is absolutely a wildfire risk. I mean, it could go through there very easily. And but I think that they're still far enough away. I don't believe that they're covered by any of the evacuation warnings.
Hmm.
So yeah, it's something to look out for. It's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
So
moving on.
The Olenguito. You guys heard of the Olenguito?
Oh, it was just a little
cat rat thing, whatever it is. That the Smithsonian announced the other day.
Oh, yeah.
The thing that everyone was saying looked like the teddy bear, and then you look at its feet, and they're like Freddy Krueger.
Seriously. Yeah. That's what, like, this picture
of
this
nightmare
animal.
Teddy bear do you have?
Seriously. That's my point. It's like, it looks like a badger. Like, it has these horrible claws. Like, oh, it's so cute. No, it would
He's
rip
pretty
your face
cute. Facially
off.
Cute. He's
right,
facially
but that's
cute.
Not the part. I bet if he opens his mouth, it's got all kinds of sharp dagger teeth, too.
You know, I mean, it's cool to discover a new species. That's great. But the thing that I think is the coolest about this is they actually had one of these living in a zoo and didn't realize what it was, and they didn't realize what they had.
That probably wouldn't happen with a Bigfoot, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Wow, look at the size of that chimp. What a freak.
That gorilla's on steroids.
What is up with that chimp?
Will you get Dave out of that costume?
Did you guys see Anchorman?
Yes.
With this sleeping bears at the end. Anyway,
sequels out this Christmas.
I don't remember what it was. It may have been Ben Radford or somebody saying like every time these things are found, the cryptozoological people get all like, look, there's still animals in the world that we haven't found, and why that's such crap. But it isn't crap. And I mean, the point is, there probably are a lot of animals that are still in the world. That doesn't necessarily mean that Bigfoot is real, but I'm just saying that we don't know everything. Yeah. You know,
there is a much bigger teddy bear with much bigger claws on its feet somewhere.
We just haven't found it.
And he's going to rip Ben Radford's face off one night.
I don't know if that was Ben Radford. It may have been, what's that, Doubtful News? It may have been Doubtful News.
Oh, Sharon Hill.
Yeah.
That's a good blog, though.
Yeah, it is. No, it is. Yeah.
She's got The level of seriousness and snarkiness is so well balanced.
Yeah.
And some of the things really deserve it. And,
unlike us, we're mostly just
unlike
snarky.
Us, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so anything else about the Olenguito? I just like saying it. I hope I'm saying it right. Olenguito.
They're good eating, from what I hear.
Yeah, tasty. And their eggs have very large yolks.
Yes. Great for bacon.
Did you see the bear video?
Yes.
You know, I didn't.
It's on our blog. And it's a perfectly, you know, reasonable video of a very talented bear. And I was surprised that there are so many people on the internet saying that it was fake, that it was computer generated. It doesn't look at all fake to me. It looks like a bear doing what bears do in circuses. Not all bears, obviously. You don't see a lot of bears in the woods playing horns and stuff.
Oh, sorry.
No, the point being, of course, the reason why it means something to us is that these folks including, you know, Finding Bigfoot now has a book out, apparently, and they talk about the Jacobs photo of a bear and about how, like, you know, once we get a great picture of a Bigfoot, that's just going to solve everything. No, it's not. It's not going to solve anything. Anything.
Oh, my God. I'm watching this bear video.
Oh, he rocks.
Dude, he just killed the owner. What are you talking about?
Oh, I never watched it to the end. Is that the end? I never watched it all the way to the end.
It's pretty cool. No, I agree. We all agree that I mean, again, in this era,
it won't
of
be a video. Right.
I mean, I think there could be a video that gets it could be very intriguing.
Sure.
Much more intriguing than what has come forth so far. But yeah, for verification, no.
This poor bear. He's our case in point. Oh. And then there was a comment on our blog. We have a blog. Did you know that? TheBigfootShow.com.
Yeah, I do know that. I peruse it occasionally. Oh, my God. This bear is rocking it, dude. He's playing this trumpet.
I know. He's a killer bear. He's awesome. So this guy commented saying that we have the bears. Who cares if people believe the video is real or not? It's like, well, dude, you're totally missing my point. My point is that, yes, we know bears are real, and we know that bears do tricks in circuses. And here's a video.
Put it on the internet, and the assholes will come out.
Yeah, that's not real. That's totally fake. We should jump over to viewer questions, listener questions. We don't have viewers yet.
Can we skip ahead? Because there's one that I really want to hear you guys talk about.
Kill it. Go.
Yeah.
Go.
Dean Higgins. I don't care about the other two parts of his question, but the first
part. Dean. Screw you.
No, the first part, it's a great question. He said, what weird things have happened to you?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to talk about that. Yeah.
That's a great question because it doesn't have to be Bigfoot related because just weird shit happens in the woods all the time.
Right. Where is he?
I got one. I know what I'm going to answer with, but what's yours?
I'm in between. I've got a couple that are really kind of weird.
Well, you're in the southern woods, so.
Yeah, there's a lot of weirdness going on
down here.
Is it, I'm trying to find specifically,
I don't remember where it is either, but it is a good question. I was happy to see that one come off. Wow, there's a whole bunch of questions I haven't even seen on here. We're going to do another show.
Besides the thing that happened to me 20 years ago that I think it was probably Bigfoot related.
Right, besides that.
Nothing really besides the... you know, the thing with the Mississippi cop and the pants stuck around my ankles. I can't, you know. Yeah, that was what? What? That's goofy. Nothing comes to mind. Nothing really that really? I didn't feel was amazing. Explainable.
No weird lights, no funny sounds, no like.
No, I've gone to areas where I've heard about strange lights
right,
up in
North
California, but I've never seen them. You know, when you say feelings and stuff like that, I think that's so subjective. Oh, my hair stood up on the back. Who knows?
No. Like stuff you saw.
Stuff. You know, every once in a while you'll see a strange bone, but it's probably something known or.
Probably.
I always find it weird when you find something man-made, literally like 3 miles, like, you know, an anvil somewhere that doesn't seem to be part of a homestead. It's like, did it fall out of a plane?
There wasn't a coyote under it, was there?
No.
Something along those lines. It's not especially odd or weird, but something like that. We were several years ago. I forgot. I don't even know where we were, but I was out with Paul and maybe Bob Strain was with us. And anyway, we were hiking along off the trail out in the middle of, I don't even remember where, just like not where people hang out. And there was this pile of beer cans that was like from the 70s, like just sitting there on the ground, cool. Right? Wow. Like, what the hell? Like, these things have been sitting here for decades, just sitting here.
No pop top, just the
yeah,
trank.
The pull cab, you know, the old Schlitz cans, like they're skinnier than they are now, you know, and taller. And with the pull off, the thing that you choke on if you stick it in the can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just sitting in the, it's something like that. I'm not especially weird, like I said.
You know,
but.
By the way, speaking of the power of the internet, literally last night I learned something. You know, the little pop tab they have the things you put in, like you say, people will put it in and it's not a good thing. And there's a hole in that thing. You know why that hole's there?
Straw holder.
Straw. I never knew that.
Shut up.
It's a straw holder.
No, it's not.
It is.
I'm snoping that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Straw holder. It's because it's cheaper to make with a hole in it.
Do you know on, you know, pans, little cooking pans, at the end of them, there's sometimes near the end of the handle, there's a little slit there. You know what that slit's for?
For hanging it on a hook.
No, actually,
you're not gonna tell me to hold a spoon. I'm not gonna believe that.
No, it is. It's to hold the ladle or not, or the, you know, the tasting spoon. It puts, so it drips back into the pot.
All right.
Wow. You know what? There, it's official. There is a Bigfoot moratorium.
No, no. So here, we'll no, the weird thing years. That happened. So here's the weird thing that happened to me. I'll go, and then Sam can say all of his weirdness. But I can only think of one thing to answer this question with. There was 3 years ago now, maybe, or 2 years ago, I was in, whenever I went to the Olympic Peninsula, and I was out there with, I just totally spiked his name, John.
Pickering?
Pickering, yeah, John Pickering. Great guy, really awesome guy to hang around by a campfire with. He's got such great stories. He's been there for so long. Anyway, we were out, we were on this road, we were call blasting. I don't think I talked about this on the show. And we were on this road over this awesome valley. I mean, you do the call blast over the valley and it just echoes and echoes and goes on for a really long time. And I think we were overlooking Hump Tulips River. I'm not exactly sure. I think it was the drainage for that. But it was this nice long road and then it curved and then straight in front of the road, like the road looked like it was going right towards this ridge. And there were, of course, trees on this ridge, and the road was pointing basically into the peninsula. You know, we were going right. That's where that road, if you just went on a straight line, you would sort of bisect the peninsula. And we noticed after a while that there was this light at the top of the trees, and we couldn't tell if it was like a plane or if it was a helicopter or what it was exactly. But and this light would be there sort of at the tips of the trees. And then it would sort of go behind the trees, and then it would come back up, and it was over to the right just a little bit, and then it would go back down, and then it would come back up, and it was over to the right. Just, and it did this for maybe, I don't know, I bet we watched it for like 20 or 30 minutes. And I had my night vision, which is a really awesome set of night vision unit. And when I looked at it through my night vision, I could see that it wasn't going behind the trees. It was going down into the trees. I saw light being reflected back on trees, and I saw trees being silhouetted in front of this light, and it would go down into the trees, and then it would come up to the top of the trees, and then it would go back down into the trees again. And it was super weird. There was no noise. There was, and it just did this sort of marching from left to right along these trees. Super weird. And my kid was with me and he freaked out. So we had to leave, but I was like, really wanted to check this thing out and see what it did. But that's probably the weirdest, like most unexplained, bizarre thing that ever happened to me in the woods. No idea what that was. And we went the next day, and that ridge was a lot further away than we thought it was at night. It was way the hell out there.
Brian, that was obviously Venus.
Right. Could have been Venus rising or swamp gas. Could have been swamp gas. I'm not saying, I'm not saying it's a UFO or what the hell it was. I have no clue what that thing was.
Yeah.
But it was definitely inside the trees.
You know, actually, one thing I did notice once. I mean, it didn't have to do with dancing lights, but it had to do with the interesting thing you can see when you're looking at what's probably a planet through low atmospherics, right, with all the debris in the air. It's amazing, independent of observable wind, because you're in a still environment, you're looking how, at least where you're standing, right, is how the colors can change on something. It looks like lights are flat when in fact it's just in all probability the debris changing, shifting pattern in front of it and throwing off different parts.
Yeah, it's refracting different parts
of the spectrum. Yeah. Right. That was pretty cool. That was actually, I think, up in Central California somewhere. But no UFOs or anything. This was in the woods as a kid. I would consider it paranormal if it was in fact paranormal, but one time, college, fraternity. I was in a fraternity.
That was the mushrooms, dude.
That was the no drugs. Came back to. I lived in the fraternity. Me and another fraternity brother were sitting in the living room. Nobody else was there, and I just had this weird vibe, like something was in the room, like in the higher part of the room. It just felt like a presence, right? And I didn't say anything to him. I said, does anything seem weird? And he goes, it feels like somebody else is here with us. And so the next two or three people who came back if I recall correctly, trying not to tip, they said the same thing, and then it dissipated and it was gone.
That was weird.
It was just weird. Nothing even remotely like it since. But it,
well, that's not in the woods. I got something that wasn't in the woods either. I remember once when I was a kid, and I was over at my dad's house. I was going upstairs. I turned everything off, and I was going upstairs to go to bed. And from the living room, I heard a man's voice say, "You kids turn that music down now, you hear?" Just clear as day. And there was nobody in the friggin' house with us. My dad was asleep upstairs. It was just me and him. And I heard it like that dude was standing like right next to me. It freaked me the hell out. I don't have any idea where that voice came from. Totally.
Ben Radford's grandfather.
Ben Radford's grandfather. And it was like a dude telling me to turn my music down. But I didn't even have any music on, right? That was the weird thing. It was so, so strange. It was freaky. I went upstairs so fast.
those instances are always really, no, I'm not saying it, that wasn't an interesting, that is an interesting story. But the thing with voices are really interesting when you hear stories, when it is more than one person, because because of the potential of an internal voice. We all have internal voices, and you could be thinking about something and you know that would, but if you've got two or three people and they all hear the same thing, then you know it's not an internal thing. It's something external. Maybe.
All right, Sam, what's your thing?
Wow. I've been listening to your guys' stories and trying to think of one myself. And I'm kind of like Scott, you know, I can't really think of anything right off the top of my head, but at the same time, there's just been tons of little weird things. Like you were talking about the beer cans. One time my wife and I were hiking off trail and we found these four old Coke bottles, and they were laid perfectly side by side on top of the leaf litter. Like someone had put them there intending to come back, and for whatever reason, they had just stayed. There was one time where we'd set up a game camera, and we'd actually put a salt block. And if you've never carried a 50-pound salt block, you know, 2 miles up a creek to put it out in the woods, you just have not been living. But anyways, we went and we put this salt block out there, and we put the game camera over it, and we watched this thing for about 2 months. And the last time we went up there, we were actually taking the camera. I sat down on a log, and sitting down on the log beside me there was this big pile of rhododendron branches that were kind of, you know, they'd clearly been pulled and, you know, broken off. And it was just this big ball of little rhododendron branches. And at the time, I was so focused on managing the camera and getting that all squared away, I didn't really think about it until we had already left. And I got to thinking, and I was like, you know, there were no rhododendron there. I mean, they're there. They're all in that area of the woods. But right there, there were none. And so we go back and we look at the camera, and you could see where I was sitting on this log. And in none of those photos is this ball of rhododendron there.
That's crazy.
But I guess the weirdest thing, some people will say this is Sasquatch related. I don't know, but this is something that there's a history of in this area. And I know Stan Courtney has talked about it, but it's hearing crying babies in the woods. No. The first night that I ever took my wife out with me, we were dating at the time, and we went up to an area where I'd been frequenting. And the first place we stopped, I was getting my gear together, and we started listening, and heard a couple of really clear footfalls in the woods not too far from where we were stopped. And so I said, you know, let's listen here. And so it, you know, we heard a few more steps, and you know, it's just that like creepy horror movie, almost, you know, very purposeful slow steps in the leaf litter. And I finally got uncomfortable enough to where I said, let's pull a little bit further up the road to where, you know, if this thing comes at us, whatever it is, we'll at least have a little bit of warning, because we were literally sitting at the edge of the trees. And so we pulled up a little bit further and we stopped, and we started to hear this thing in the same general vicinity, which was, you know, maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 yards from us. It was really close, that sounded like a baby crying. And it was the most pitiful, plaintive, I mean, you just felt this gut reaction in you that you should run out and assist whatever this was. It was just the most pitiful sound, and it was very loud. It was very clear, and it just kept going on and on. And we listened to it for probably about 10 minutes. And I would call, like I would make a yell, and this thing would kind of cry back to me, and I would yell again, and it would cry again. And at the same time, we could still hear these occasional, you know, footsteps. And whatever was making these footsteps sounded very big, but whatever was making this crying sound sounded very little and very pitiful. And it was just really unsettling until finally it stopped making noise and we went on about our business. I mean, to this day we talk about it, and I've listened to all kinds of owl vocalizations, and you know, particularly like screech owls and things like that, because that's what comes to mind. And this was just very, very creepy. Like I said, it was like listening to a baby. The way I described it, it was like listening to something trying to sound like a baby, because I have a baby. I've had two children now, and it didn't sound exactly like that, but it was very similar in that, you know, just that that pleading, constant sound. But
any chance it could have been Sloth from the Goonies?
He has a much deeper voice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not in the woods, though. I saw this, but this didn't happen to me exactly. I went to my junior and senior year of high school. I went to a very old school that's here in the North Georgia mountains. And, you know, like any old school, there were lots of legends about ghosts and things. And we would hear, you know, sometimes you would be in a dorm room by yourself and you would hear like doors banging and, you know, that kind of thing. Or you would hear, you know, like feet moving down the hallway at night when nobody was out and, you know, those kinds of things. And that's neither here nor there. I mean, I don't put a lot of credence in that kind of stuff simply because, like Scott said, sounds can play such tricks on you. But one of the legends that the school had was that they had a photograph of a ghost. That they had this real photograph of a ghost, that there was no doubt that when you were seeing this, that you were seeing a ghost. Mm. And so for my entire junior year, I kept hearing this legend. And then my senior year, continued to hear it, wanted to see it. And we actually had
show me the ghost.
Yes. Exactly. Show me the money. We had sort of a historical little, office. We had a historian at the school because the school was so old and because there was so much history in the area that it was tied to. And so finally, I managed to finagle my way in, and I was speaking with this woman, and I said, you know, we want to see this picture. We've heard about this picture. And I was with two other students. We were in a special social studies program, and we were studying the history of the area. And I said, you know, this is germane to our studies. We'd really like to see it. Can you please just let us take a look? And so she took us back there. And the creepiest thing about it was we were looking at the photo where the photo was taken. And so it's not like you're looking at something on the internet from, you know, some burnout castle in Scotland you know, something like that. I mean, you're standing there where this happened. And I mean, to this day, I can see this photo perfectly. The front of this building was like a long hallway, and the photographer was standing back down the hallway, looking down the length of it. And about half the distance down the hall, there is a woman. And she's standing there, and she's looking straight ahead. She's looking out the window. She's wearing, I hate to say period dress, but it's obvious that she's wearing an older style dress. She's dressed pretty well. And she's looking out the window. She's kind of got her hands down in front of her a little bit. Her hair's up. And you can see all these details just perfectly. And then from about where her hips are, she just starts to disappear until you get about – you know, about halfway down her thigh, and there is nothing. And in this transition period, you can start to see things beyond her. Mm-hmm. At first, it's a little bit hazy, and then it gets a little bit clearer and a little bit clearer until you can clearly see through where the rest of this woman should be. And so often in life, things get hyped up and built up, and then when you finally get to see them or experience them, you're like, oh, man, you know, come on. But this... I mean, to this day, it's kind of chilling to think about that photo, because with everything I know about photography and exposures, I just can't, I can't understand how that photo could have been taken any other way
right.
than for that to have really been what these people, you know. And they don't claim it's a ghost. They just say, oh, this is a photo of a woman who, you know, who happened to be in the hall. Let's completely discount the fact that she has no legs.
And she appears to be suspended in the air.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because a lot of times you see these ghost photos and it's either like because it was long exposure and somebody moved, or it's just some like weird play of light that your brain So your expectations, that's what you're going to see. Right.
It's such a clear, focused photo.
Right.
You know, and it is, it's that older, like sepia toned,
right.
you know,
that's awesome.
Film stock or whatever, photo stock. But yeah, that was pretty
I have crazy. A thing kind of like that. My wife and I, when we lived in our old house, our first house together, our last house, not this one, the one before this, we used to, the lady that built the house died in the house, which doesn't mean anything necessarily, except that she built the house and she lived there for like 50, 60 years. And then she died in the house, because that's what you do, right? A lot of times you died at home. I took this picture of my wife upstairs in our bedroom, and there was like an alcove behind her. And we didn't realize until later when we look at this photo that behind her there's like a shadow. There's like a gray kind of thing behind her. And like looking at the photo, we're like, what is that? Like what? And so you're sitting there, and because I know the place because it's where I lived. I lived there for like 7 years or whatever. And it's like, what is that shadow behind you? And it wasn't really like a dark shadow. It was more like a lighter gray thing. It was just this thing like right behind her shoulder, right? And it, when we looked at this, and we didn't think anything like spooky about it, when we're like, what is that thing? You know, we were just sort of curious about it. And as we're looking at it, my wife, like, okay, that just creeps me out. And now I think she got rid of that picture. I think it creeped her out so bad. I think because I cannot find that picture anywhere. I've looked for it. But it's sort of like you take a picture of something and it just like something shows up. And
it's like that movie Insidious where all the photos of the main character when he was a little boy, there's the dark shadowy woman following after him.
Yeah. That's it. Okay. Well, we've gone off topic quite a bit there. We should do a podcast about ghosts. That would be fun too.
That would be Halloween.
Travis Nevilles. Nevilles. He says, I have a great topic. Well,
we'll be the judge of that.
It better be. You know, when traveling, one must take immunization because of viruses from one place in the world to another. Should researchers also take precautions as to not touch gifts and hair samples with their hands as not to spread or contact disease to or from these creatures?
It is a good question.
It is a good, I mean, I don't think you can spread it to a creature if you have one of their hairs. I don't think there's any way they can get it back. Maybe they come and get it from you. I don't know. But I think that, you know, when you go to visit gorillas, if you go on one of these ecotourism things to hang out with the mountain gorillas or the other gorillas, they often have you wear a mask and you're not allowed to touch them because they can catch human disease. You can actually get their diseases as well.
Right.
AIDS is from primates. It's from bushmeat hunters eating and probably getting blood in a cut or their eye. That's how they caught it. So it's really easy.
Isn't there a link to between Ebola and primates?
I don't know. Yeah. But it's definitely, we're so closely related, we can pass on to each other. I mean, we can get a cold from a pig, or the flu from a pig. So if you can get the flu from a pig, you can get something from a...
I know that with scat in particular, there's the threat of parasites. And you can get some pretty nasty infections and things from handling or coming to too close contact of animal scat. And it doesn't, I mean, it's not just touching it. I mean, literally, if you're breathing... breathing the air too close to it, you can contract some pretty nasty stuff.
You shouldn't taste it then, is what you're saying.
Yes, no taste testing.
I would think if a habituation scenario ever developed, if what hasn't already that we don't know about, that would be a great thing. You would want to minimize as much
contamination
as possible.
Well, I know that there are some people in the field who are attempting to, I don't know, these crazy bloodthirsty killers who are attempting to collect a specimen. I've heard of these guys anyway.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, they've taken into account the need for gloves and masks and things like that. You don't want to be touching the blood of a primate that you know nothing about because you could easily get a disease from it. So that was a good question, Travis.
Yeah, it was good.
Not a whole topic, though. I don't know if I call that a topic. It didn't really get into topic territory. But, you know,
don't handle the poop. That's the main thing that you can bring out of this.
Do not handle the poop.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I got – I know you guys are going to love me bringing this up.
No.
But I think – it's okay. It's okay. I think it's going to be mellow, but I think it is an interesting question that we haven't talked about.
Okay. What?
I know. Well, a specific niche, if you will. Okay. And it, can we have a drum roll, please? It is related a bit to the kill, no kill. Okay, I know. Come on, man. It'll be quick. But it's interesting. If, let's say, for example, what do we know? We now know that it was speculation back and forth, but it has now been proven beyond any scientific reasonable doubt.
Proven.
That Neanderthals and humans made it.
Yes.
We know that. Okay.
Yes, we've even talked about that on the show.
Right, exactly. So we cannot rule out the possibility that that may be, perhaps, we don't, because we know so little about these things that, and again, without supporting any of the findings by Melba Ketchum,
but not knowing
anything that if there is, how would that, let's say, for example, we had a DNA sample. We got a DNA sample.
Is this going to be about Rule 34?
I don't even know what that is.
What's Rule 34?
If there's a thing, there's a version of pornography about it on the internet.
No, it's not. It has to do with, let's say we found a dead Sasquatch, let's say, or whatever, and we found this DNA. Holy God, this is a primate. It's got a little bit of this. It's got a bit of human.
Right.
How would that then affect the kill, no kill debate? If you knew that was the case with one of these, would that?
I think the question gets to what makes something human, and I guess that's a question that's just a really big and hairy one all by itself, right? Not to make a pun or a joke about it, but I think that you have to, if another creature was so close to you that it could breed with you, I would have to feel that it would look a lot more like you. I mean, we're very, very close to other primates, and we can't crossbreed with a chimp or with a gorilla. So these things would have to be remarkably close to us. And I have to think that if they were, and I'm not actually answering your question, I understand that.
No,
if they were that close to us, that they would look, I mean, Neanderthal did not look remarkably different than us. I mean, they looked clearly different than us, but they looked a lot like us at the time as well. So I would think that if wood apes,
have you seen some of my cousins? I just want to know.
I mean, you know, some of those, like, remember the Russian women wrestlers from the 70s? But I'm saying that 8 feet tall and completely covered in hair seems like a little too far away from us to be something that we could actually breed with. But it does, if it were that close, I think there would be other things. I guess what I'm trying to get a long way of saying, and I kind of am answering your question now, if they were that similar to us so that we could actually mate with them, I think we would probably have a natural aversion to wanting to kill them because they looked so much like us, you know, and I don't think.
I have a natural aversion to wanting to kill one, so do a lot of people. It's not everybody wants to kill.
We just opened up the rabbit hole. The rabbit hole is open.
I know.
It's like I can see into the cold.
It's
now.
A good topic. Come on, dude. It's a good
way
one.
To go,
you know,
Scott.
I respect your opinion. I respect
I'm saying
this
that regardless of how you feel about, you know, eating meat,
killing
or
one,
hunting or any of sort of along sort of the spectrum of stuff that you're touching on there about like not wanting to kill one, right? I think there's a spectrum of human response to the death of another animal for whatever reason. I think that most of us, unless we have serious issues with our brains, can absolutely draw a line at things that look human, right? I mean, we have like a natural aversion to that. And I think that goes beyond, you know, hunting for meat or whatever the case may be. So that's what I'm saying. I think
there's also a thing that most humans have developed too, which is a sense of compassion for animals that don't have anything. Right. So it's, I mean, and I know in our specific scenario of as far as harvesting one versus waiting to either find a dead body or furthering of DNA analysis, so this wouldn't be necessary. I don't know. I just think it's interesting. I didn't mean to bring it up to poke you with a stick or anything, but I just thought it was, I don't know. You know, I have a hunch that within that, if a body is not recovered within the next 10 years, I wouldn't be surprised that the continued development of DNA technology would make it more feasible for that actually to happen. In other words,
a lot of it with DNA is the chain of custody and how it's been handled and all of that. I mean, DNA is tricky stuff to work with, especially when you're dealing with something that you're trying to either identify a human or a human-like animal. I think that where that DNA goes and who touches it and all that kind of stuff is really, really critical.
Right.
And as we get better and can more finely tune the analysis, what you should be able to do is remove things that are that are contaminants, right? So maybe it would be possible to pull out contaminants more easily or identify them more easily.
And not only that, but on the same general technological point is tracking, I think stuff is going to get more amazing as far as maybe even nanotechnology.
Somebody said something about that on our thread. But you know, right now I think you got issues of range and battery and size.
Yeah.
You know, somebody posted this to the thread, Steve LeMay, who we've asked, has been on the show before via his questions.
Right. But I think we all agree on this, that ideally it would be the best situation, wouldn't it? If one didn't have to be killed just to prove it. That ideally, if the circumstances were such.
Oh, yeah, right. I could go with that. But, you know, we don't live in an ideal world. But, yeah, it would be nice if.
Well, you're not helping.
If one just sort of fell over dead next to the side of the road, that would be awesome.
And if we had more proof, which we don't, that they're actually endangered, but we don't. So you'd be speculating whether or not they really need one. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Rabbit hole.
Close I'm sure it. They're different than
that's we need a rabbit hole sounding device.
Well, Sam doesn't jump in on this shit. He needs to be the one to tell us to knock it off.
Sam
he just sits there. He's basically,
I'm not getting in between.
Sam,
he's posting crap on the internet of things that couldn't possibly.
He's slaughtering donkeys every day in his backyard.
He's plotting the death of his donkey.
You're not denying me my Bigfoot jerky, damn it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm okay. If you eat the damn thing, fine. Well, that's yeah, okay.
I'll definitely have a bite. I get to pick from where, though. I just want to say that. Did you guys see the Mission BC video? A couple people brought this up. We talked about this. It was on the blog. I don't think we talked about it on the show. This is the one that looks like a guy setting a tent up on top of a mountain that was put out there by that company that makes a really horrible app.
Dude, so many red flags with that. I mean, first, remember that it wasn't there a connection between all the Asian tourists who were supposed to
be. Yeah, it was that company again.
Yeah, and then it was that company again. How can anybody?
Well, the thing is that what we thought, I guess based on what they were putting out there, that their app was supposed to make a video that would look like it had a Bigfoot in it. But it's actually some sort of like really weird geocaching kind of like real time game, but you can only play it in certain places, in certain parts of the world, right? So if you're not in British Columbia, it doesn't do anything for you, right? So it's a really bizarrely and probably badly planned out app to begin with. So they were putting these videos out there. I think that is clearly a red flag. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I think that it shouldn't necessarily discount it as a piece of evidence, but it is clearly a red flag.
Yeah, it was in the fact that there were two, and it looked actually pretty cool. Yeah. And but again, it goes back to your point about that, you know, with video manipulation and the digital technology, we can do that now these days. It's just, it can only be interesting. And that's about it. Unless there's gotta be some way, I don't know. Maybe Sam knows a little, but I wonder if Brian as well, but is there any way, if somebody has a piece of video and let's say you had an object, a Sasquatch perhaps, ran in front of the, and you could tell that the camera was stationary, ran from point A to point B. You know exactly where it happened, so you could determine conclusively if in fact it was a real object in the field plane, that it moved a certain miles per hour.
Absolutely. You can do that.
Yeah, but can you do that? Can you absolutely rule out that it's not a digitally manipulated image?
I think you can. I think that you can if you have access to the source materials, the source files, and the camera and that sort of thing. And you know, this is no different. This is it is different because you're talking about digital manipulation, but a lot of this is basically the root of the Patterson-Gimlin argument. I think that you can. I think that people who do this for a living could look at the thing. And there was actually a video that was on the internet. We may have touched on it on the show of something jumping across a trail. And it was.
I thought it was digital. You didn't think so?
I think this actually was digital because if you zoomed in on it, it wasn't done especially well. And where it came out and where it went in, it didn't line up with the trees. I mean, it looked really great the first time you saw it. It absolutely was sort of like almost Hollywood quality kind of special effects. But if you took the time to really zoom in on it and look at the pixels, you could see that this thing just sort of appeared and then just sort of disappeared. And where it appeared and disappeared didn't exactly line up with the trees and everything else. So I think that if you have access to it and you need a high enough resolution source file as well, I think. I mean, looking at something that's been uploaded to YouTube, it's already been mangled by YouTube just putting it up there. So you need to have a... I think so. I'd say yes. That doesn't mean that you could conclusively determine that it was real based on looking at it like that. I don't know if that's possible, but I think you could.
Mm.
I think so. You're the filmmaker. What are you asking me?
No,
for?
I know.
What the hell, man?
I don't think you can. From my understanding is that, yeah, but I think you're
no,
right.
No, we're talking about the video of the guys from Georgia who saw the thing peeking out from behind a tree. That yeah. I didn't think was digital.
Oh, I thought it was.
And no, this was a different really video I was just talking about. Yeah, this other thing was the, I forget what their names are now, but the guys that were down in Georgia, the father and son duo. You remember what their names are, Sam?
Stacy
yes.
and I'm drawing
Stacy's one of them.
Yes.
Everyone listening to this is going like, blah, 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 to their radio yeah. right now.
But yeah, but that was thermal footage too.
Right,
which,
right.
You know, you're dealing with a little bit different ballpark
exactly
there.
Right, exactly yeah. right. Mike, you know, I this was on our blog because I think that we are so quick to dismiss these things. Getting back to the earlier point about people wanting to never be wrong, that they just immediately discount things before they even have a chance to, you know, properly consider them. Those are the people that I find, and I do the same thing. I'm not saying that I'm perfect because I do it too. I'll look at it, that looks like shit. You know, that looks like total crap. But I think that you need to sort of stop and really just, you know, I think I've noticed this about people like Rick Knoll, for example. I've never seen him immediately dismiss something, even if it looked pretty stupid, right? I mean, he's the kind of guy who wants to look at it and sort of evaluate it and then come up with a form an opinion. I think we should all strive to be more like that.
And yet he still thinks the Memorial Day footage is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, we're not always right.
Yeah.
Memorial Day footage is pointless.
It is totally, you know,
it's pointless.
When was the last time we talked about that? But the one part of that that just was, if this didn't break the deal for you, then you're truly delusional. I mean, truly, in a probabilistic sense. And that is, you see this thing running across the field, right? And then there was that bit of the footage they finally revealed where it shows a guy clearly in the direction where this thing ran wearing a ghillie suit with a paintball mask up. That's part of the footage. No, that could have just been a guy standing over there. You know, it's like, what?
Yeah, my point on it is it doesn't matter if it's real because it's so low quality. It's not doing anything that's outside the realm of human
absolutely.
Ability. So there's
absolutely.
No
see that's the thing. I mean, if you don't have a certain level of resolution, you shouldn't even be talking about it in
right.
terms
it's
of
pointless to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, talk about it, sure, but don't talk about it like it has any kind
right.
of worth outside
right.
of, oh, well, that's something, you know, interesting to look at.
And the only thing in that exactly. instance, but I agree with you guys, that it wasn't out of the realm of human endeavor, was if you did have the stationary camera and it was pretty reasonably sure this wasn't added to the video. And if it was moving at a speed, because remember, they tried to do those testings and they showed that it was well within the speed
right.
of people and it wasn't moving particularly gracefully and... It is probably the most overhyped piece of video, and I mean PGF's great because
that's
it has
a good
so many
question. What's
dimensions.
The most overhyped piece of purportedly filmed Sasquatch evidence? Keeping the PGF out of it,
right? No, because PGF has enough.
The PGF
has enough
whether or not it's real or not, the PGF is on a planet
different
of its own, right?
Yeah,
totally,
absolutely,
totally different.
I would
but
say Memorial Day. That's the first thing that comes.
Memorial Day. You got the Freeman footage in there.
Yeah. Yep.
What else you got though? You don't have a lot of video.
It's
There's
true.
The New York City baby footage.
Oh, the baby in the tree. Yeah. Right. The
that's
monkey
just
in the tree.
That has just another. But the thing is, like with Freeman, it's obviously a guy in a suit or Bigfoot. There's really no other two options. The New York monkey thing
that's
could
a
just
monkey.
Be a monkey.
That's a monkey.
That a guy, you know.
I'm totally with you. I actually think, now that I think about it for a few seconds, I think Memorial Day is probably the most overhyped piece of footage. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's thanks to the internet again. I think the internet has given
and,
that thing.
And those early cable shows that hyped the crap out. And certain experts who would do that.
What was it called, that one?
Legend Meets Science.
Oh, it was in Legend Meets Science, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Is Legend Meets Science the one that really sort of like rekindled the Bigfoot?
That was one of them, certainly.
What was before that?
Well, you know what? Actually, the one when I was in, not that I would that I was in
oh,
it had anything to do with it. No, it was the A&E Bigfoot one where Daryl and I got interviewed.
Yeah, that was
even though that was you know, and I think that it's a pretty good show, but that was part of the
mid-90s. But Legend Meets Science was that dude here in Minnesota.
Doug, what's his
name? Doug Hychek, and then he went off and did the next that series, Monster Quest.
Monster Quest.
I was going to say Monster Quest was really kind of the stepping stone from Legend Meets Science to where we are now.
Right. And that was a popular program, and maybe that's what kicked it off. Who knows? What else we got? We should be thinking about wrapping up here pretty soon.
I gotta get to. I gotta clean the rest of the house up before I head.
Scott's got to do, you know, housework. So
I know that's important, and I will keep an eye out for any Sasquatch in the Mount Whitney area. I think the odds are incredibly low.
Are you going to the top of Whitney, or just hike around?
That's the goal. It's a 4-day backpacking trip. Horseshoe Meadow up, and then coming at going up one side, down the other. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good quarter.
That'd be fun. What are you doing, Sam?
Nothing.
Chickens?
Chickens, yeah. Chickens. No big plans on the immediate horizon.
Right. Me either.
Yeah. How's the pool coming, man?
Yes. How is your ice skating rink / leaf collector?
It's not going to collect leaves because it has a cover. So I just want to get that out. Yeah.
Let me just say this as a pool owner to a future pool owner.
Yeah.
There will come a day. I promise you, there will come a day where even if it's just hypothetically, you will start to weigh the cost of what it would take to get rid of that thing.
Oh, dude, I don't. This is funny. I said this because I saw Kathy Strain earlier in the summer. And I said something about building a pool. She's like, oh, no. She's like, build a pool.
Don't
horrible.
Good advice,
right?
Kathy.
It's sort of like I've done two things now. I bought a boat. And you know the saying that the two happiest days of a boat owner's life is the day he bought it and the day he sells it, right?
Yeah.
And I can kind of see where that's coming from. And now we're putting in a pool. The pool was not my idea. I did.
Well,
want the pool.
Was it at least partially an investment idea for future resale?
No. No, it's horrible. No,
was it,
dude, if I was
really?
No,
pools
the
are
worst
bad.
Thing.
Oh,
it's a financial burden.
It's horrible.
I mean, anybody looking at a house, if it has a pool, you have to realize that the upkeep of that home is going to be higher just because of that pool.
The other definition of a boat is a hole in the water you keep pouring money into, and that's kind of what a pool is. It's a hole in the ground you just keep pouring money into. Yeah,
and water, because it evaporates. Because
the water does evaporate. Yes, it does.
I am so happy I live in a dumpster.
Pool wasn't my idea. Anyway.
Whose idea? Was it the wife?
Well, yes. Who all?
I thought the kids might have made a push.
No,
I don't know.
No, we're not going to drop that kind of coin because the kids wanted it. No. No, we're going to need counseling before this is all said and done. It's this huge deal, we live in this really kind of weird lot that's hard to get into, so it's been very complicated. And then the original plan was not able to be executed because of something to do with how our foundation is on that end of the house. So now they've come up with a different plan, which was awesome, but it was like $30,000 more. And man, this whole thing.
You know,
when
your wife started pushing for this, you should have rented a copy of The Money Pit with Tom Hanks.
Or The Swimmer with Burt Lancaster, about a psycho guy who swims in people's backyards just randomly. That could happen.
Shut up. That's not a real movie.
That's a real movie. This
is
guy,
that really?
I swear to God. Late 1960s. It's called The Swimmer. He goes and swims in people's pools. He's kind of having a mental breakdown, and then he meets the people in the pools he swims, and he jumps fences and keeps swimming in their pools. You should have shown that to her. Is it too late?
To do what? Show her that? No.
Can't you just fill it up with dirt?
No, dude. It's way too late. No, man. We're so far into this now. No, I got 27. I'm not lying to you. I have 27 tons of rocks in my backyard. That's how much it is. It's 27 tons. We got retaining walls. We've got cement slabs. It's way too late. Far too late. I remember the day that they tore the old yard out with like the earth movers and everything. I just felt like a hole in my chest opened up. Like, well,
have the hostas come back yet?
We're in it now. No, those hostas are
buried.
They're
done for.
Yeah.
That's an impressive feat to kill off a hosta.
It is, yeah.
What the hell's a hosta?
It's a plant. It's like a little leafy plant that,
You have to like salt the earth to keep them from coming back. Yeah.
And they just keep getting bigger, right? You have to split a hosta. You have to pull it up out of the ground.
Well, we had this big white oak beside our pool, that died, and I should have just let the damn thing blow over and take the pool out. But we ended up, we had a
then insurance could have helped you out, right?
Yeah, exactly. We had a guy come out, and he had to basically cut it from the top down. And he finally got to the point to where he started cutting off these big sections, you know, these like big 8-10 foot long sections of the trunk. And we have these hostas that grow along this trail that goes to one of our little side lots. And one of these big sections of tree fell on the hostas. I mean, squashed them flat as paper. Yep. And we're out there with chainsaws and we're cutting it up. And we're walking on top of the ground where these things had been. And I mean, just absolute annihilation. And sure enough, every single one of them has already come back.
Yeah.
So
yeah. They're pretty anyway.
Yeah.
It could be worse. All right, guys. Well, let's just call it then. I mean,
yeah, it's a good show.
You ready to go? Yeah, we got tons of questions. I feel guilty that we didn't get. There were some really good ones in here too, but you know.
But dude, how many of those have we answered before? Seriously,
Some of them we have. There's still a lot of people want to know more about Area X, which is kind of funny. But there's still a lot of X questions. There's questions about game cams and questions about Super Bowl picks. You want to? You're the only one here who would do that. Who's going to be in the Super Bowl?
Wow, I have been. The first, I'm not picking the Patriots. I hear they have a tight end issue. I haven't been following enough. I'm just going to go with my gut. Gut, total Steelers.
Steelers.
They find a way, it seems, every like four or 5 years, don't they?
All right. I have no idea. I'm still watching baseball. I'm pretending like football doesn't exist until the World Series.
Oh, yeah. How about, what are your odds that Dodgers win the whole thing?
I'm not talking about that.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to jinx
it. It's too close. It's too close to my heart.
Hey, did I ever tell you I played in Dodger Stadium?
Shut up.
Dude,
what did you play?
I was a member of the 1976 Los Angeles City Champion team. The championship game is played in Dodger Stadium each year. I did not play an inning, but the one inning I base coached at first base was the inning we scored our only two runs and won the game. Yeah.
No, my dad had a picture of me when I was a kid. I was like, 10 months old in a Dodger uniform. And the caption was starting pitcher of the 89 Dodgers. I mean, I've got Dodgers like all the way down. Right. And we have not been to the World Series since 1988. And this is the first team that looks like it can actually do it.
That is amazing. It's been that long.
It's 1988. Yeah.
One other thing you might find interesting about your co-host, my dad was a pilot for the Dodgers in the late 50s.
Oh, that would have been so cool.
Yeah. We have a ball signed, and it unfortunately hasn't been kept in super great shape, but it was signed by the entire team. It's got Koufax. It's got Drysdale. Yeah.
You got to get that checked out.
Yeah. My dad was a pitcher in college, and he pitched batting practice for them occasionally.
That's sweet.
So, yeah. He's a huge Dodger fan. So you're welcome over the house anytime.
Oh. I'll wear my hat. All right, guys. I think that's it. We'll call this one a show.
It's a show.
It's a show.
Well, I've got to be on my way. I'm swimming home.
You're swimming home?
I figured out there's a river of pools all the way to my house.
Crazy idea.
I think it's a brilliant idea. Well, what are you doing it for? Why do you want to do it? I think it's very original. I mean, I think it's an adventure.
Come with me.
I bet you never knew I had a big crush on you.
You did?
I was mad about you. Out of my head.
Come with me.
Ned, please don't. Please leave me alone.
We made love together in this pool. And you loved it, remember?
I lied.
You loved it, Shirley.
I didn't.
You loved it. You loved it. God, what a beautiful feeling. We could have swum around the world in those days.
That was before we ever touched a drink or a cigarette.
Or a girl. Or a girl.
That doesn't sap a man's strength.
Or I'd be in a wheelchair today.
Peggy. Ned Merrill, still bragging.